My goal today is to finish up our little short series on the relationship between the Romans and the Jews leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Last time brought us to the year 68, when Vespasian, along with his son Titus, are carrying out pacification exercises or military operations in Galilee and preparing to go to Judea and Jerusalem to put an end to the insurrectionist Jews there. They are doing this in full support of King Agrippa II, who is both Roman and Jewish, who is the custodian of the Jewish Mount. And all along, it is understood that this is not an operation to annihilate Jews or to annihilate Judaism or to annihilate the Jewish city of Jerusalem or the Temple Mount. This is all intended to put an stop to insurrectionist Jews that are tearing the region apart. So when Vespasian, who's carrying out these military operations, gets word that there's a revolt against Nero out in France area, he tries to hurry his operations up because he wants to help deal with the civil war area elsewhere. In May of 68, the original instigator of the Gaul uprising, Vindex, ends up getting attacked and defeated, and so he commits suicide. But in the process, others are showing their dissatisfaction with Nero as emperor. And so in the midst of all of that, Nero commits suicide in June of that year under intense pressure from anti-Nero forces. And so the empire now descends into another civil war. And this time there are competing emperors on several different fronts. And when Vespasian at Caesarea hears about this, he immediately puts his military operation on hold. Now, why does he do that? Because the emperor who had commissioned this military operation is now dead. And so it is common practice that you have to wait until the next commander-in-chief comes into power to know whether or not you're supposed to continue or modify your activities. So he's basically waiting for things to be settled at Rome so that he can understand clearly what his requirements are. Now, you need to understand, though, that during all of this time, while Vespasian had been carrying out military operations in Galilee, and now that he is closer to Jerusalem and he's put some of his stuff on hold, at Jerusalem, there are multiple factions of insurrectionists that are fighting with each other. And so Jerusalem is full of Jew-on-Jew violence. The Romans are not even there. It's all Jewish, and they're killing each other right and left. And they're destroying things right and left. The once beautiful city that had been made that way by Herod the Great is now a ruined shadow of its former glory. Only the Temple Mount seems to be fairly intact. The rest of the city has suffered greatly. So that is the way things kind of go until the next year, 69. In the spring of 69, Vespasian has been contacted by enough supporters that he has agreed that he would be the best choice for ending this civil war between competing emperors and to become the new emperor himself, that he is a much more stable personality than these other guys are. So in the middle of June of 69, Vespasian's soldiers in Judea acclaim him as emperor. He then frees Josephus from bondage as kind of one of the first acts of being the new Roman emperor, in large part because Josephus had predicted that he would be emperor. Now, at Titus's recommendation, Vespasian has Josephus's chains broken off of him, not just simply removed. Because, as Titus said, this would be representative of the idea that he should never have been chained in the first place. From that time onward, from June of 69 onward, Josephus is a free man traveling with Titus as an advisor of sorts as to what will happen next. And so that is why he has great eyewitness accounts of the destruction of Jerusalem. On the first day of July of 69, Vespasian, who had gone to Egypt, was acclaimed emperor by the legions of Egypt. And he then got on a ship and headed off to Rome to settle affairs there, because he still has to put down a couple of contenders before he can truly reign. In the late winter of 70, that is 69 going into 70, so in the late winter of 70, the beginning of 70, Vespasian is now safely and securely on the throne in Rome. And he dispatches Titus, his son, as the commander of the military forces that will finish the pacification operation that he had started. So Titus returns to Caesarea, and he has with him all these military forces sufficient to get the job done. And he begins his actual siege of Jerusalem after Passover of that year. He purposefully avoids starting it during the Passover, giving people a chance to leave and go home to separate themselves from the insurrectionists. But what happens is the majority of people that are at Jerusalem for the Passover feast of that particular year don't leave. They just stay. It could be that some of them were supporters of the insurrectionist idea. Others, maybe they were afraid to leave Jerusalem when they saw all the Roman camps going up around Jerusalem. But after the Passover was over, Titus then orders that a military cordon be put up around the city. Basically, a small wall is put up all around the city, just outside of slingshot and arrow range from the walls. And his Roman soldiers will now patrol that wall each day to make sure that no supplies get into the city and that no incursions are made out of the city. Now, if you want to read all the details of the siege, go to Wars of the Jews. And there's tons of information there, a lot more than I want to go into, or even a lot more than what we need to go into. But basically, as we already talked about, all the Jewish believers in Jesus abandoned the city several years earlier. So inside Jerusalem at this time, as best we can tell, there are not any believers in Jesus whatsoever. They continue to fight against themselves. By this time, there were three, and then finally only two insurrectionist subgroups that were controlling major places inside the city. And the people were starving to death because these insurrectionist forces were confiscating all food supplies now that the military cordon had been put up around the city. Just talk about one particular sad event. They were doing a tour around the city, and this is Titus and Josephus, and they come across one particular area where the people inside Jerusalem have been throwing dead bodies over the wall. And there are just so many dead bodies there. And the decomposition is making a stream of this disgusting smelling fluid coming from this big mass of bodies. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger all the time. And Josephus comments on the fact that Titus is moved with compassion for the innocent Jews that have been caught underneath the boot of all of these insurrectionist Jews and how much suffering is happening because of that. When Josephus writes his Wars of the Jews, which is the first thing he writes it in 75, so only a few years after it occurred. In his preface, he says some things that are important to us as Christian students of the Bible. This is from Wars of the Jews, preface. It is subsection 4. Josephus writes, "However, I will not go to the other extreme out of opposition to those men who extol the Romans, nor will I determine to raise the actions of my countrymen too high, but I will prosecute the actions of both parties with accuracy." So he's basically trying to set down, I am not going to try to play either side of this fight. I'm not going to talk nasty about the Romans, nor am I going to just praise them to the high heavens. And I'm not going to talk nasty, overly nasty about the Jewish people, but I'm also not going to support them when they are horribly wrong. So he says, I'm going to try to just let the chips fall where they may. Yet shall I suit my language, the passions I'm under, as to the affairs I describe, and must be allowed to indulge in some lamentations upon the miseries undergone by my own country. For that, it was a seditious temper of our own that destroyed it. So Josephus says the major cause of the destruction of Jerusalem would be the insurrection, and that they were the tyrants among the Jews who brought the Roman power upon us, who unwillingly attacked us and occasioned the burning of our holy temple. So he says, the Romans got drug into this because of bad choices of these Jewish insurrectionist tyrants. Continuing, Titus Caesar, who destroyed it, is himself a witness, who during the entire war pitied the people who were kept under by the seditious, and did often voluntarily delay the taking of the city and allowed time to the siege in order to let the authors have opportunity for repentance. But if anyone makes an unjust accusation against us when we speak so passionately about the tyrants or the robbers, or solely bewail the misfortunes of our country, let him indulge my affections herein, though it be contrary to the rules for writing history, because it is so come to pass that our city, Jerusalem, has arrived at a higher degree of felicity than any other city under the Roman government, and yet at last fell to the sorest of calamities again. Now, I want you to understand what he just said there. He said, I need you to understand, I'm not playing favorites here. I'm not schmoozing. I'm telling you straight up. Our city, Jerusalem, was the best city in the Roman Empire at one point. And now, all of that came crashing down where it was lost. That's what he says. Continue. Listen to this very carefully. Quote, accordingly, it appears to me that the misfortunes of all men from the beginning of the world, if they are compared to those of the Jews, are not so considerable as they were while the authors of them were not foreigners either. So he basically says, this is the worst time in history. Now, does that sound familiar? It should. Because in Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, and the parallels are in Mark, Jesus says this about this event that we're studying. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be, end quote. So Josephus pretty much makes the same assessment after the fact. Now, that's actually, Jesus is actually alluding to Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, which is zeroing in on the time of the Messiah and the time of the atonement. And Daniel 12, 1 says, at that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time, your people will be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. So those are the prophecies that we need to understand. The other one, Luke 21. We did this last session. I want to do it again because Luke is the one that gives us a good commentary paraphrase, thanks to the Holy Spirit working in him, for us to understand what the abomination of desolation is and the fallout of these prophecies taking place. Luke 21:20. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation has come near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are inside the city depart. Let not those who are out in the country enter in it. For these are days of vengeance to fulfill all that is written. Alas, for women who are pregnant, and for those who are nursing infants in those days. For there will be great distress upon the earth, and wrath against this people. They will fall by the edge of the sword, and be led captive among all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So Jesus made that prophecy in 33, and here we are seeing it fulfilled in 66 through 70. When the war started in 66, when Cestius came through the holy city area, many of the Jewish people abandoned the city after Cestius's 12th legion was destroyed. But the Jewish believers in Jesus abandoned the city because of the prophecy of Jesus in the Olivet Discourse. And so they were spared. They were not there when the military cordon went down and when all the infighting was happening inside the walls. The temple was eventually burned on the 10th day of the fifth month. Yes, I know Jewish people say it was the ninth day, but Josephus, who was there, says specifically it started on the 10th day of the month. It happened in a fight that was kind of a follow-up to firefighters, Roman firefighters trying to put out some certain fires, and they were attacked by some Jews, and they fought them back into the temple building itself, the actual shrine building. And in the scuffle that happened, one of the idiot Roman soldiers picked up a piece of burning wood and threw it into the temple. And that wood ignited some of the flammable material inside. And once that got started, there was no way of stopping it from burning the temple completely down. Now, obviously not the stone portion, but all of the flammable material inside of it. Josephus reports that Titus had just had an advisory meeting with his commanders, and he had come to the conclusion that he was going to try to save the temple building by killing the remaining insurrectionists inside of it, because he felt that that was important, no doubt because of King Agrippa encouraging him to do so. And then he had gone to rest when he got word that the building was on fire. And he came and he tried to help get it stopped, and it didn't work. And so that's how the temple got burned on the 10th day of the fifth month. And then over the next month or so, they finished taking the entirety of the city of Jerusalem. It was taken by the Roman coalition. King Agrippa II was right there in the midst of it, no doubt bawling his eyes out over seeing the city pretty much nothing but a skeleton, because the insurrectionists had damaged almost everything to begin with. And when the Romans started coming to the temple building where the insurrectionists had kind of taken their last stand, they were demolishing things as they went. So the whole northern side of the Temple Mount was pretty much all dismantled by the time that the temple building was burnt. The Tower of Antonia was also pretty much erased. When we go to Jerusalem, we have a sense exactly where the Tower of Antonia had to have been, but there's no archaeological remains because of all the military operation that was happening here. And so once everything was over with, this is what we know. 97,000 Jewish captives had been taken throughout the entirety of the Roman War. Now, those captives were pretty much men or women under arms when they were captured, and so therefore they were combatants. And so they are now going to be dealt with as combatants. And so that was through the entire war, 66 to 70. But 1.1 million Jews had died during the siege between the late first month until the sixth month. So basically 5 months. And most of those dead Jews were from Jew-on-Jew violence inside the city or from disease and famine, from being basically shut off from supplies because of the insurrectionists. And then when everything was done, the Temple Mount was totally scraped off. It was torn down. When we go to Jerusalem, you can actually see where the stones were pushed off the Temple Mount and crashed to the public street down below and just destroyed the stones that were down below. So there was not one stone left upon another. All had been torn down, just like Jesus said. And then because so much of the city had been destroyed and damaged, Titus ordered that the rest of it be taken down, just dismantled and scrapped, except for three big towers in the western Herodian palace complex, and the wall that went between those three towers. That's the only thing that's left. And today, there's only one of those towers that's still standing, and I've been up on the top of it, and it's a very sobering moment to be up on top of that as being one of the few remaining places of the original Jerusalem. Now, where does that leave us? When Jesus says something, it happens exactly as he said it. And so the only thing that's left for us to understand is that the Temple Mount, city of Jerusalem, is going to be trampled underfoot by Gentiles, meaning non-Jews, until things get wrapped up. And that's basically going to happen when Jesus Christ comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so I hope you are thinking about that and preparing for that, that you are already prepared for that. And so that kind of finishes up our little foray into the Roman-Jewish interaction throughout the years between 160 BC and AD 70. We will come back tomorrow, next session, and begin our study of the remaining books of the New Testament, all of them generated by the last remaining apostle of Jesus Christ, John, the son of Zebedee.